Tom and Dina Yoy never imagined that there would come a time when their adolescent daughter's life would be controlled by drugs and despair.
When you find out your child is seriously suicidal, oh my gosh, yes, you launch into rescue mode and you're afraid to sleep. You want to be with them 24/7 to put a little cocoon around them and keep them safe. And it was so hard to trust God with her when I was gripping on as tightly as I could, wanting to be in control, and all I wanted to do was save my child.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. What would you do as a parent if you learned that your child had wandered far down the wrong path? We'll meet Tom and Dina Yoy and hear their story today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. Probably most of our listeners are familiar with the story in Luke chapter 15, the story of the prodigal son.
You stole that. I had my Bible open. You looked at it.
I did not look at it.
You did, too.
I didn't.
You and I have been working together for 25 years. I'm going to start hiding my Bible from you.
It's just the fact that great minds think alike.
Okay, so what was your point, Bob?
My point is that there's very little in that story. It's treated so matter-of-factly. When the son comes to his father and says, I want my inheritance, and then he leaves, there's nothing in the story that describes what that was like for the father. But we can imagine the heartbreak of that kind of a situation, because some of our listeners have experienced moments like that. Maybe not somebody coming and saying, I want my half of the inheritance, but a prodigal leaving home is a heartbreaking experience.
I think there are a lot of prodigals in the church today, and parents of prodigals too. It's a hurting minority that I think suffer in silence because they don't feel comfortable sharing their hurt. They feel like they're going to be judged for being poor parents, and it really isn't a matter of being a poor parent necessarily, although that could be a part of the process, but it's that we don't raise robots. Our kids have a choice, and as I like to say, going back to Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3, the perfect father had a pair of prodigals who chose to go their own way.
Now, wait, I had my Bible open to Genesis 3.
you don't even have a Bible out here.
I've got it on my phone.
The listeners.
It's open on my phone.
I don't know about this. Can this broadcast be saved? Anyway, we have a pair of guests with us, Tom and Dina Yoy, who join us on Family Life Today. Welcome to the broadcast, the bitter quarrelsome between Bob and Dennis.
Well, thank you so much. It's quite a privilege to be here.
Glad to have you here, Tom.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here with you two guys.
Thank you, Dina. They have been married since 1978, have three children. And they have started a ministry called Hope for Hurting Parents. And Dina has written a book called You Are Not Alone. And your story goes back to really a pregnancy that occurred later in life. You wanted to be a mom, but you didn't get started until a bit later.
That's right. God's plans were never my plans. We were ready to have children, and it took a long time. And there was a season where I thought maybe this wasn't in God's plan for me, and I had to let go of what I wanted and trust Him. And
what was your prayer?
That I would have my first child before I turned 30.
And
it happened. Our son was born over 2 weeks late on my 30th birthday.
Oh, wow.
So God has quite a sense of humor. I wanted my own birthday. Didn't want to share it, really, but he was a pretty good gift.
Well, in the process, you had suffered a miscarriage before you had your son.
Yes. My first pregnancy ended in miscarriage halfway through, and I was devastated. And it took quite a while to get pregnant again, but then we had our son, Michael. And then I had another miscarriage after that, the same way, halfway through. And that was the first time that I actually experienced depression because I hadn't really processed the grief of the first miscarriage.
A lot of people do rush by a miscarriage and don't stop to consider the loss that is a very real loss. They feel like they don't have permission to grieve that. And it's important to acknowledge there's been a real loss here.
Yes, definitely.
You indicated early on that when your middle child was born, that you had a suspicion or an observation or an inclination, or maybe it's that mother's intuition.
Well, it was, we had planned what sounded like it was such a wonderful experience for the newborn. This warm bath that after your child would be delivered, they would lower them into this warm water and it would just be so soothing and calming, reminding them of the environment they had just vacated. So we made this plan and Tom was there. He was a great coach for labor and delivery. They handed our daughter, Renee, to him, and he put her in the water. And as soon as he did, she started screaming. And we're like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? What? This is supposed to be soothing and relaxing. And right there, I kind of wondered, what does this mean?
You didn't have any sense that things were going to be hard with Renee until puberty, though, right?
Well, more serious, no. I mean, she was a challenging child most of her life.
Strong-willed?
Strong-willed, yes, yes, stubborn. Yeah. There were many times I would be on my knees beside my bed in tears, pounding the pillow, praying, oh, God, I don't know how to parent this little girl. Yeah, I'm not smart enough or wise enough or strong enough. Please help me. She was also a great delight. You know, there was a lot of both. Very creative and energetic and athletic. But, yes, puberty brought out a lot of other challenges.
And at the age 12, you found out she was cutting?
Yes, for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was so unexpected. There was an incident between Dana and Renee, and we sent her to her room to think about this and then went back to check on her, and we found her with cuts on her arm. Then we just didn't know how to process that. Mm-hmm. What happened? You know, she found some glass on the windowsill and began cutting. And we go, oh, my goodness. Again, I just didn't know how to react with that.
A lot of our listeners hear that, and they go, that is so strange. Mm-hmm. What's behind that? Mm-hmm. You've now done a lot of research on that. You've seen a lot of other children who have expressed their anger and their fear and their depression in this way. Unpack it a bit, if you would, for parents to help them understand what that represents.
Sure. Well, it's very complicated. But the best summary that I have learned is that this is a way that an individual expresses deep pain that they are not able to verbalize. Either they're too afraid that if they speak it, they couldn't handle it, or that they just can't even find the words. It's actually a coping mechanism. There are many reasons that people do it, all the way from they're numb emotionally, and this makes them feel alive. They can feel this. Our daughter, however, said she never felt any pain when she cut herself. For some, it's a way to punish themselves because they feel guilty for things. They need to see the blood to feel that they are justified in what they're doing to themselves. So it's very, very complicated, and it's very difficult to find healing from. It can take years because it takes a long time to get to the root of what is really going on behind the behavior.
Tom, take me to the point where you discovered. How did you discover, and what? What was your daughter's response when you said, what's going on here?
Well, we walked into the room to talk to her, and when we saw these things, I didn't know if she was trying to take her life. I just couldn't process what was going on.
She wasn't trying to hide her arms from you
at all?
No,
she showed us, you know, and as we talked, well, Dina talked to her later, and she said she had never heard of it. It's not like somebody else had done it before her, and she learned from them or heard from them.
Were these deep cuts?
They weren't.
No, it looked like she got in a fight with a wild cat, and the cat won. Both arms, wrist to elbow, just those kinds of scratches. Yeah, I was just so shocked when I walked in and saw this. I remember I just literally fell to my knees and scolded her, like, this is not a good thing to do. Why would you do this? And I am so embarrassed to admit now that I said to her, pointing my finger, don't ever do this again. If you ever do this again, you'll have to see a counselor, as though that was some terrible punishment. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that since in recent years, and I have asked her to forgive me for that, and she has. She does say that that is the one thing that she wishes we had done differently, that we would have given her the opportunity to talk with a counselor sooner. She has no idea if she would have taken the opportunity or actually opened up and talked, but at least she would have had the chance.
Well, your reaction, though, as a mom, is just from a heart of fear.
Oh, yes.
You see these scratches on your daughter's arms. It's self-inflicted, and it's no wonder that you responded sternly, but you were really just kind of covering over the panic in your own heart.
Well, to be honest, I didn't want to admit that anything could really be wrong with my daughter. I'm not going to tell anybody about this, and we never did until...
You were in full-time ministry at
the
time.
Yes.
And that had to play into some of this. We can't tell anybody. If our supporters find out, they wouldn't pay our bills anymore.
Our friends aren't going to understand this. Their kids aren't doing this. They'll think, what's wrong with us? What are you doing, and what's wrong with your child?
And for a long time, I thought it was suicidal. And it was such a relief when she went to a counselor and we went into... for session as well, and she explained that wasn't suicidal, because that's the only thing I could connect it with, and to say, okay, this is a coping mechanism. It's not that they intend to take their life.
So you did eventually get to a counselor, which means this encounter at age 12 was not the end of the ride for you with Renee.
Right. It did stop for a while, several years. She was stuffing those feelings. During that time, she began to develop some OCD symptoms with odd numbers and various things. And we just kind of wondered about that. Okay, that's kind of different. It wasn't until she was a 16-year-old and we were living overseas, and she had become quite depressed and despondent. And we just realized that something more is going on here. We'd seen some red flags. We need to just sit down and talk and be brave enough to ask hard questions and wait as long as we need to till she's ready to answer. And it took literally all night. And finally, she admitted that she was cutting again. She'd become suicidal. And we realized then that that was when we needed to get back to America as soon as possible and get her the help that she needed.
At that point, being parents, you immediately move into a crisis mode, because you start thinking, what's the worst thing that could happen here? Well, our daughter could take her life.
Yes.
That's scary stuff.
The greatest fear I've ever faced. I could hardly sleep. I could hardly eat. I lost 20 pounds in a couple of months. Nightmares. When we did come back to the States and she was seeing a counselor, I was constantly looking, do I see a new mark? Is there any blood on her sheets? If she's in the bathroom too long, I'm there. Okay, I need you to help me with something in the kitchen. Very, very frightening. And I just didn't think I could hardly cope. In the mornings, I was afraid to go to her room and open the door for fear that she had cut herself maybe too deeply in the night. Would she be dead in her room? It was too overwhelming, and we had to begin taking turns. Tom, you have to go this morning and open her door.
Tom, how were you processing this? Were you at the same emotional place that Dina was?
Yes, we were terrified. When we first discovered some of these things when we were overseas, we were getting ready to leave to go to another country for a conference. And we had these concerns when we left. And fortunately, when we were there, we were able to talk to some people who had walked some of this path before us and told us to go back and ask those hard questions. Mm-hmm. So we were rather eager to get back. And as Dina said, we stayed up all night to ask those. Mm. But the fear, you know, and the confusion and not knowing what turn to take next, what step do I take next? All we knew was leave, go back to the States, and get her help there.
Yes, when you find out your child is seriously suicidal, oh my gosh, yes, you launch into rescue mode and you're afraid to sleep. You want to be with them 24/7 to put a little cocoon around them and keep them safe. And it was so hard to trust God with her when I was gripping on as tightly as I could, wanting to be in control. And all I wanted to do was save my child.
And here's what I'd want our listeners to hear, especially those who may be suffering in isolation as well. Mm-hmm. The real ploy of the enemy, and there is an enemy of your child's life and yours as well as a family. He wants to get you isolated. He wants to get you afraid where you don't share with anyone. And yet the real help comes from outside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's going to come from other relationships with people who can coach you in what to do. But in order to find those helpers, those professionals, you've got to let some trusted friends mm-hmm. in on the inside of what's taking place. When you finally did get to a counselor, this counselor made an amazing statement to you.
Mm. Yeah, it was really, really distressing. We'd gone to see the counselor, and the counselor had said, I think she needs a more in-depth evaluation by a psychiatrist. That was another shock. What, you think there's something more serious wrong? And we'll never forget the day that the three of us were sitting in his office after he had evaluated Renee, and he said, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being seriously suicidal and 10 being just fine, your daughter's about a 1 or a 2. It's a miracle she's still alive. That was like being hit in the head with a 2x4. And the three of us, she still recalls this as well. It really hit her hard, too, the reality of where we were at that point in time.
You moved back mm-hmm. to America at that point.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And things went from worse to even more tragic.
They went well for about 6 months when we immediately got back, and things seemed to be moving in a good direction, and she connected with some good friends, but those friends were older and graduated, and so the next school year, things started to change and go downhill again.
You had let Renee decide where you were going to move to when you came mm-hmm. back to the United States, right?
Yes.
Why did you give her that kind of authority?
Well, we knew it was a struggle for her to even move overseas, though she had been overseas before and enjoyed it and had a good experience. This time it was iffy. We weren't sure. And so when we were going back, we didn't want to create another friction.
More stress.
More stress for her. We're going to a different area, new people or whatever. So we tried to give her something familiar that
some
she
control.
Could get back to. Mm-hmm.
And where did she pick?
Orlando. Okay.
It was where we had lived before.
So you wind up back in familiar territory.
Mm-hmm.
Did that mean old familiar friends for her?
Some, but now she was going to be in a different school, and those people actually moved on with their lives, and they were in the former school. That was another grief for her. She thought everything would be the same, mm-hmm. connect, step right back into those friendships, which didn't happen. Yes, we let her choose because we thought, all right, let's just do anything and everything we can to make this easier on her. So we were willing to give her that sense of control. Now, she had a younger sister who was still at home, and she was very happy with that choice. That's where she would have preferred to go as well.
So you're in Orlando. Renee's in a new school. She's still got a dark cloud hanging over her soul. And I'm just thinking, if you're a high school student who's battling depression, you're going to wind up gravitating toward other people who are in dark places, and that's not a great environment to be in.
Yes. Yeah, we saw a change in her dress, a change in the way she did her makeup, the changes that she would make in her room. We let her color or paint the walls in her room the way she wanted, and she had strong, you know, dark blue on one wall, and another one was bright red, you know, on another one. And but yeah, her makeup became very darkened and heavy. Black, a lot of black.
Dyed her hair black.
Is this the whole goth look? Is that where?
She would say not goth, but dark.
Yeah. Okay.
She was self-medicating during this time as well.
Oh, she started doing that, unknown to us. Every now and then we would catch her. Our prayer was always, Lord, let her just get caught every time she does something wrong. And quite often she did. We jokingly now say most of her senior year she was grounded. And so she loves to tell us, you're grounded now.
How was she self-medicating? What was she doing?
Drinking, smoking
drugs.
Pot,
yeah.
Taking pills, I think anything someone would offer to her. And again, the parents are always the last to know. These kids are very good at hiding it. So, and I, in particular, was pretty naive and gullible and didn't want to believe the worst anyway.
How did you find out?
Well, we caught her on a number of occasions, and especially during her senior year. And it wasn't a joke because she was grounded just about her whole senior year. She'd just have a week left of grounding, and then she'd do something else. You're grounded again.
did you walk in on her smoking weed, or did you find pills in her drawer, or what?
Well, we caught her at school. Dina happened to walk into the school office to take something to our younger daughter, and there was Renee checking out that another friend had forged a note and was waiting in the parking lot to get her.
She had been drinking that morning in the parking lot and was leaving. I could smell it on her breath. So I confronted her. But we began to see a lot of these changes came slowly, the dress, the outward appearance, the friends, the type of music. And we were always very strict with the music, trying to keep her away from the really awful stuff. But we could hear angry music, more depressing, hopeless kind of music we would try and constantly keep her away from. The friends, we eventually learned from actually a school counselor who called us in one time that her circles of friends had become some of the worst kids in the school. Mm-hmm. So we were trying very hard to keep her away from them as much as we could. But again, they're pretty sneaky.
Okay, so if I could take you back to her senior year and you could do it over again. Is there anything you could have done looking back? Anything you would have done differently? Anything you think could have steered her off the course she was on?
I don't, you know, I think of perhaps a different discipline method that was more appropriate for her.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Well, that's, I don't know.
We wish
I
we
really
knew.
Don't know.
You use grounding.
Use grounding, you know.
Withholding privileges.
You can't do this, you can't do that. But we weren't sure what other options we would have.
We would often turn to Scripture as well, and we would try and choose some that seemed very appropriate and fitting for whatever the issue was that she had done. And so we would try and, again, a way of continuing to get truth into her mind, we would have her write out these Scriptures some number of times. I think maybe more willingness on our part to go to a counselor to even get help for us. If she wasn't going to change, well, let's get more help for us to even learn what are some other methods that we might try, because we just didn't even know what to try.
Even her counselor advised us. She said, Renee will come in here and she'll sit and talk. I'm a safe place for her to talk. But she's not processing anything. She's not moving in any healing direction or positive direction. I'm just a safe person and really, really don't need to keep coming and doing this.
Part of the reason I asked the question, and I think at one level it's comforting to hear you answer the way you did, because parents who are in the middle of it are desperate for what's the silver bullet? What can I do that is going to fix this?
Mm-hmm,
and does that mean move across the country? We'll do it. Does that mean this? They'll do whatever to save their child, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And you guys, even looking back on it, say, I don't know that we could have done anything differently, even from this perspective. And it goes to your point, Dennis, which is kids are not robots, and we can't control some of what's going on in their heart and their soul.
Yeah, and what I would say to parents who are listening in and they're suspicious that maybe something is going on in their younger child's life, late grade school, junior high. I mean, the pressures are enormous today on young people at earlier and earlier ages. Or perhaps you have a teenager or a young adult living at your home and you know something's going on. Mm-hmm. And here's what I would say to you. Number one, begin to ask God as a couple, or if you're a single mom, ask God for wisdom about what you should do. And maybe a part of the wisdom is, God, would you help us catch her, so we understand what's happening here? What's the truth?
Yeah.
Because one of the problems that a parent of a prodigal faces is they don't know what they're up against.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They truly don't know how to come back with an offensive game plan, because you don't know what you're up against, whether it's depression, is it peer pressure, or is it substance abuse. A second thing I would say, and this is absolutely as important as the first, find a couple of mature friends that you can confide in as a couple. Go to their house to have dinner and say, we need you to pray for us. We need you to be a sounding board for us, because we're handling this internally. And it's really difficult to know exactly what to do.
And your point there is not so much that your friends are going to have an answer for you, but you're going to need the emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
You can't try to battle this just the two of you and expect that weight to be something that you as a couple alone can bear.
I think that's a good point, Bob. And I think when you bear this weight alone, even if it's a couple, you lose perspective. And you need somebody to kind of pull you out of the weeds, put their arm around you and say, you know what, I've observed you as a parent. You've made some mistakes. But you have to realize you are raising a child who has his or her own will. The third thing that I would encourage a couple to do is out of this prayer, out of this counsel, godly counsel that you get, put a plan together in terms of how you as a couple are going to approach this child. And a part of the plan may be that you're not going to enable this kind of behavior going forward and continue to bail them out of situations that they get themselves into because of their irresponsibility.
That may lead to some very hard calls that parents have to make.
And that's what makes this difficult, Bob, because the nature of a parent is to want to protect their child from being hurt.
Yes.
And yet if you as a couple have agreed upon your plan, here's what we're going to do if and when. And you stick to it.
Yes.
You don't waffle. You don't wilt. You don't backtrack. And you may need to go back to the couple that you confided in and say, you need to help us here. We may call you in the middle of the night and say, we're about to cave in here.
Mm-hmm.
Remind us of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to know, as a parent who faced some days, perhaps not exactly like the Yoys have faced here, I can just tell you this may be a cross-country race. Mm-hmm. This may be a journey that's not just for a season or for a year or two.
Yeah.
It could last for a decade. Now, I know that's not what some parents want to hear right now, but if you don't develop that kind of perspective—
mm-hmm.
I think you're setting yourself up to be disappointed.
Your point about putting together a plan, don't expect your plan is going to fix things in a week or a month or 3 months or 6 months.
Yeah, you didn't get off in the ditch overnight. A child who's developed foolish behaviors, that's what the scriptures call it, is going to need some help in getting out of that ditch. And that may not occur until the 20s. Or till they're in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is really, really tough.
Dina and Tom, you guys have together turned your experience into an outreach for parents who are on the same journey that you were on years ago with Renee. You've got a website. In fact, we've got a link at our website, familylifetoday.com, to your website so folks can get more information about your ministry. And you've written a book called You Are Not Alone, Hope for Hurting Parents of Troubled Kids. We've got copies of that book in our Family Life Today Resource Center. It's available for order online at familylifetoday.com. You can order from us online. And again, the website is familylifetoday.com. Now, I know here in the United States, most of our listeners today are enjoying a day off as we take time to remember those who have made sacrifices for our safety. Here on Memorial Day, we do want to pay tribute to veterans and their families, particularly those families of men and women who paid the ultimate price to protect our freedom. Our hope and our prayer here at Family Life is that when families go through the kinds of trauma and turmoil that many veteran families have been through with the loss of a husband or a wife, a son or a daughter, our prayer is that those families are rooted and grounded in a faith that is strong enough to see them through that trial. Our goal here is to effectively develop godly marriages and families, because we believe those godly marriages and families can actually change the world. And we just want to say how grateful we are to those of you who are financial supporters of this ministry. We're in the last few days of May, and during this month, our goal has been to raise $1.1 million that will enable us to continue work on a number of projects that we're hoping to complete this summer. And many of you this month have gone online to contribute to that $1.1 million goal. Thank you for your support. If you'd like to see how we're doing, you can go online at familylifetoday.com, and it'll show you how close we are to reaching that goal. And if you can do anything to help us get over the top, we would very much appreciate it. You can donate online at familylifetoday.com, or if you'd prefer, you can mail your donation to Family Life Today at Box 7111, Little Rock, Arkansas. Our zip code is 72223. Tomorrow, we're going to hear how Tom and Dina Yoy's journey with their daughter Renee went from a tough situation to a place of even deeper relationship darkness and despair. I hope you can tune in for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.